Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to talk about global debt, and particularly the debt levels for emerging and developing countries. Over the last 20 years, a lot of countries have received debt from agencies such as the World Bank and the IMF. But one of the biggest lenders in that period has been China, through its Belt and Road Initiative. And as the impacts of both COVID and the Ukraine war start to roll out and put more pressure on these economies, there are now question marks as to whether or not China is experienced enough and has the capability to be able to handle these distressed debt situations and to get involved in the bailout discussions. And one of the problems that we have is that the terms and conditions in the China deals are impacting the ability of other agencies to be able to come in and sort out the situation and to advance more money. So in today's video, we'll have a look at exactly what the current situation is. We'll have a look at the percentages of the emerging and developing nations that are now in difficulty and are needing further help. We'll have a look at the terms of business that China have been implementing in all of these countries and what the implications of that are for everybody else. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think is likely to happen over the next 3 to 6 months and what the implications are for the global economy. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video if you're enjoying the content, and please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters, so you can skip through things if you're not that interested in them. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below, where you'll find links to YouTube's Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon. China's Belt and Road Initiative was launched in 2013 and was designed to improve infrastructure in emerging and developing countries. It's estimated that the total cost of all of the projects included in the program will be over $1 trillion. And to date, it's estimated that around $380 billion worth of debt has been put in place for over 150 different countries. The projects included in the initiative are wide and varied, but include the development of road, rail, ports, airports, technology, and other forms of communication infrastructure. The deals that are put in place often include debt provided by Chinese banks with a variety of terms and conditions applying to them. A review of the terms and conditions was undertaken by the Center for Global Development, Peterson Institute for International Economics, Kiel Institute for the World Economy, and Addedata. This chart shows the breakdown of the type of deals for Chinese investment compared with the general market. And as you can see, the predominant focus of the Belt and Road Initiative is on transport and storage. And this accounts for around 40% of all deals, which is significantly higher than the market average. The next two categories of investment are energy and communications. And as you can see, the Chinese focus on these sectors is also significantly greater than from other debt providers. Now, one thing that is very interesting in terms of the terms and conditions of these deals is the use of confidentiality clauses. And this chart shows how things have changed over the last 10 years or so. In the period up to 2014, it was not common to have confidentiality clauses in the contracts for emerging and developing nations. However, there was a complete change in this strategy in 2014, and as you can see, in all contracts beyond that period, we now have full confidentiality clausing. So this means that the country involved in the deal, who sign up to the debt, cannot disclose to any third party what the details are in that contract. And that's clearly a concern for other agencies, such as the World Bank and the IMF, because they don't know what has been agreed. Now, this chart shows the percentage of all deals that are secured against future income of that project. Now, the sections of this graph in grey at the bottom relate to the deals that are put in place by all of the rest of the world. And you can see that there is a very small percentage of contracts that relate to future income. So the investment that's being provided to build a power station, for example, or an airport, less than 10% of these deals require that infrastructure to be able to generate income to make the payments. This is essentially investment. It's helping develop the infrastructure in the country. The terms of the Chinese deals are somewhat different. The China Development Bank, which provides a lot of the infrastructure investment around the world for the Belt and Road Initiative, 75% of all of those deals are linked to the future income of the project. So what that means is that the project has to be successful in order to be able to pay its way. The terms of the deal put in place require the income to be generated in order to meet the debt that's being put in place. So essentially, you're building it like a project finance initiative. It needs to be profitable. It needs to pay for itself to pay off the debt, rather than being a grant or an investment that helps the country. So this is a much more commercial arrangement than what these countries are receiving from other agencies. And the problem with that sort of deal is that if there are delays or holdups, or the project doesn't generate enough income, then it will leave it in an exposed position and could become a distressed situation. Now, this chart shows an example of a deal that was put in place between China Development Bank and Ecuador in 2010. The bank provided a $1 billion loan to the Ecuadorian Ministry of Finance, which was to be used in two tranches. The first tranche of $800 million was given to the country to finance projects of infrastructure, mining, telecommunications, social development, and energy. The remaining $200 million loan was committed for the purchase of goods and services from selected Chinese contractors. The billion-dollar loan was backed by a separate oil sales and purchase contract between Petro Ecuador, which is the state-owned entity in charge of all oil in Ecuador, and Petro China. The agreement required Petro Ecuador to sell at least 380,000 barrels of fuel per month and 15,000 barrels of crude oil per day to Petro China. The oil proceeds were to be paid by Petro China into a proceeds account opened by Petro Ecuador with Chinese Development Bank in China, and which was to be governed by Chinese law. Petro Ecuador was not permitted to make any withdrawals from the proceeds account. So this is a really interesting structure, because China has essentially given a billion-dollar loan to Ecuador, which needs to be paid back. It is a loan. It's from the Chinese Development Bank. But alongside the loan, Ecuador has also signed up to a variety of other requirements to provide PetroChina with large volumes of oil. And it's really interesting that all of the payments backwards and forwards here are all going through the same account. So what that means is that if Ecuador defaults on its debt, if it's not able to make the debt interest payments or to make repayments when they're demanded by the China Development Bank, then that has a direct link to the oil that's being bought by PetroChina from Petro Ecuador. So essentially what this means is that if Ecuador fails to make its repayments, China could demand payment in terms of oil that's coming from Petro Ecuador. So China has essentially taken security in the form of oil supplies from Petro Ecuador, rather than this being just a pure development loan that's given to the country to help them develop infrastructure. We've got a direct link to the oil supplies from Ecuador. And the clear message is, if you can't repay the loan using dollars, then we will take those repayments using oil. This chart shows the structure for a $659 million loan made by two Chinese banks to Sierra Leone for the upgrade and expansion of Queen Elizabeth II Quay in Freetown. The borrower of the debt was National Port Development Sierra Leone Limited, a special purpose vehicle which entered into a concession agreement with Sierra Leone's government to operate the port for 25 years. The project was established and is owned by Sky Rock Management Limited, a private company incorporated under the laws of the British Virgin Islands. The loan's primary purchase was to finance the port's expansion, which was to be carried out by a consortium of Chinese engineering, procurement and construction firms. Under the terms of the deal, Skyrock Limited provided a share pledge to the Chinese banks, which also had a mortgage over all of the assets of the port. In addition to this, repayment of the loan was to be fully guaranteed by Sierra Leone's Ministry of Finance, and as a final condition, the borrower was required to use part of the loan proceeds to purchase an insurance policy with Chinese state-owned Sinosure, which insures 95% of the facility plus accrued interest against political and commercial risk. So we have a situation here where the Chinese banks have given money to Sierra Leone to develop their port facility. However, as part of the contract, Chinese contractors are the only parties who are able to undertake that work. So essentially, those Chinese companies will be receiving all of this money back in payment for their services. So whilst this is helping develop infrastructure in Sierra Leone, it's also helping these Chinese companies to earn profit and develop their overseas operations. Now, under the structure of this deal, if Sierra Leone is unable to make the repayments or to pay the interest, then the Chinese banks have the opportunity to be able to take ownership of this port. And this is something that we've seen before. If you follow the channel, you'll know that we covered a situation in Sri Lanka where China set up a similar arrangement. Hambantota Port was developed. Unfortunately, Sri Lanka couldn't make the repayments, and the Chinese then took a 99-year lease over that port. And that's caused a lot of concern all around the world because China theoretically could use that as a military base. Because it owns the port, it could start shipping in a variety of things and use that as a location in the event that it needed to. Cross-default clauses enable a lender to be able to enforce on its loan in the event of a borrower failing on any of its loan obligations. So to put this into simple terms to understand, if you had a car loan and a mortgage that had cross-default clauses on them, and you failed to make a payment for 1 month on your mobile phone, your cell phone obligation, then in theory, you have defaulted on that obligation, and that would then trigger a cross-default. And in that situation, your mortgage provider could demand full repayment for your home loan. So it could force you into bankruptcy if that was the situation. So that's quite an extreme example, but it gives you an understanding as to what cross-default clauses do. They enable a lender to take action against you in the event of you defaulting on absolutely any of your obligations. Now, cross-default clauses are common in commercial banking. If you've been following the channel for a while, you'll know that we were talking a lot about Evergrande, the Chinese property developer, a number of months ago, and the bondholders in that situation had cross-default clauses. So as soon as Evergrande failed to meet its obligations on one of the bonds, all of the bonds triggered because they were all able to look to that default and claim a default on their own bond. But cross-default clauses are not common for loans given to emerging and developing countries to be able to build up their infrastructure. This table shows a comparison of the terms and conditions of loans provided to emerging and developing nations. As we just discussed, commercial banks always include cross-default clauses in their documentation, and this is shown in the grey bar at the bottom of this table. However, the other three grey bars here show the percentage of terms and conditions including cross-default clauses from a variety of other agencies. And you can see that only 11% of the deals provided by multilateral creditors, so that's multi-country deals that have been put in place, have cross-default clauses. 43% of deals put in place by non-development assistance committee members have clauses, and 62% of DAC members do have these clauses. The section in red at the top of this table shows that all of the deals put in place by the Chinese authorities have cross-default clauses. So what this analysis shows us is that the deals being put in place by China are being structured entirely on commercial basis. These are being structured like bank loans rather than being assistance and development loans. The direct impact of the Ukraine war has been devastating for a lot of emerging and developing countries. We've seen more than a 50% increase in oil costs and food costs, and that's been highly damaging. These countries were already at breaking point following on from COVID. They just didn't have any spare capacity to cope with any further price rises. And so we're now in a situation where a lot of these countries are on the verge of defaulting on their debt. We've actually seen some countries such as Sri Lanka actually default, and it's likely that over the next 3 to 6 to 9 months, we will see a lot more countries going into a default situation. And the normal course of business when you have a default at the same time as an emergency is that the aid agencies will all sit around the table and try to thrash out a deal. So the IMF is an example that we use quite frequently on the channel. They come in, they may offer $1 billion or $2 billion or $5 billion facility to try to see the country through this extreme period. And there are a number of concerns that are being raised right now with regards to the amount of Chinese debt that is currently in place. In 2022, it's estimated that the poorest countries in the world face a $35 billion debt service payment charge. And over 40% of this, so around $15 billion, is due to China. Now, the problem that this throws up is that China are refusing to deal with all of the other agencies. And because they have cross-default clauses in all of their documentation, they've now got a default situation. And the IMF and other agencies have no idea what the Chinese lender's reaction will be to any of these discussions. So let's talk about a theoretical situation where the IMF was about to put a $1 billion loan in to help a country. If they go ahead and do that, but at the same time, China decide to declare their cross-default clauses and say all of our loans are now in default and you need to pay them back immediately. And if you don't pay us back, then we're going to enforce on our security and take over the port or the airport or the roads that we've just helped you to build. then that country would be faced with a dilemma of either having to give some of that $1 billion that they've just received from the IMF to help them through the emergency to the Chinese banks to keep them from seizing those assets, or they could just lose control of all of the assets that China has helped to develop. And this is a real situation because, as we just mentioned, this has happened before. It's happened in Sri Lanka. So obviously the aid agencies don't want to go ahead and hand over large amounts of cash to these countries in case China uses this situation to leverage its own position. So really what everybody wants is for China to come round the table and join these discussions. But that's not happening. China are refusing to engage with any of the other parties. So nobody knows what they're going to do. And one of the other problems that we have here is that China doesn't have a track record. The IMF and World Bank, much as they're maligned and there's a lot of negativity about them on the channel here, at least they know what they're doing. They've been through these situations before. They've put follow-on facilities in place. They've put restructurings in place. So they have a track record of doing this. China doesn't. It's been lending money over the last 10 years to all sorts of different countries for different reasons, but it hasn't really been through many restructuring situations. And obviously what's going on right now in the global economy means that the Chinese economy is also under pressure. So they're having to talk about restructuring their own businesses, their own economy, everything that's going on at home, at the same time as having to deal with over 150 other countries. So this could become a really nightmare crisis situation that China just refuses to deal with. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because I think it's interesting what's happening right now. Clearly, the world is going into some form of recession. That looks like it's happening. And a lot of the emerging and developing countries have really suffered as a result of the price increases that have come on through the Ukraine war. And we've got lots of countries that are at breaking points. I've posted a number of videos on countries who are needing a bailout position. Now, the bailout usually comes from the IMF or the World Bank, and that's what everybody expects. But the problem that we've got right now is that China have provided a lot of debt facilities to these small countries. And until we know what's going to happen with the Chinese debt, it's very difficult for these agencies to come in and hand over large checks to sort out the situation, because it could be detrimental to that country to do that. They could then be put under pressure from China, either to hand over some money or to hand over some assets, or maybe even both. And so the agencies want to know what the bottom line is going to be. They want China to come out and stipulate exactly what their situation is and what they're intending to do. But of course, China are refusing to do that. There is no visibility whatsoever. So we could get to a situation here where these countries urgently need money. They need the bailout, but they won't be able to get it because China is refusing to play ball. They don't want to join in with the other agencies and come up with a collaborative collective agreement. They want to be seen to be doing their own thing. They don't want to be at that table. And that really could cause major chaos. We could get to a situation where the agencies aren't giving out any money and countries are literally in a bailout emergency position, and we could have chaos and anarchy. So it's a really big concern right now. And it's not something that I can give you an answer to. I can't say what's going to happen. These agencies will probably have to just take a view on it and just give the money anyway. But there is a very real risk, as has been raised a number of times before, that all of these debt positions that have been built up by China could be used to leverage their position. It could be that China decide to take over all of those assets. They've been dealing with all these countries like they're commercial entities, like this is a business. And so they have security. They have means of taking money out of that country, whether it be through taking more oil, in the example that I gave you earlier in Ecuador, or seizing control of an asset like the deal that we just talked about in Sierra Leone. Who knows what it might be? But we may well see China starting to try to leverage its position, taking control of assets and taking little enclaves all across the world over the next year or so. Be really interesting to see what happens. So I wanted to post this video just to make sure that everybody was aware of what the situation is and what the implications of structuring these sort of deals like loans is for the countries rather than being a grant or an investment or something more benevolent. So hopefully you found this video interesting, useful and informative. If you've liked what I've said today, then please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.